Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 85 of the Peer Geek Podcast. And as always, it's an absolute pleasure to have you listening. Now, if you are unfamiliar, we do have the Peer Geek app, which you can download on your iPhone, Android. Just head along to the peergeek.com/app. And it's probably the easiest place to listen to the podcast because it's right there on your device, and it's no better place to tune in. Now, I'm really excited today to welcome Mel Hamada to the show. It's been a long time coming. You know, we've met each other a number of times now in a couple of countries, actually, a couple of continents, if you really want to get technical. And I love everything that she does, and it's an absolute treat to have her on the podcast. So welcome.
Thank you, Jared. It's lovely to be here. It's taken us a long time to get to this point, though.
It has. Not through lack of trying, though.
No. Not for lack of trying. I think it's interesting because I think you and I have been, if I think about sort of social media and getting on social media, I think I met you early in my social media days. And it's been quite a long collaboration, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you were one of our absolute masterclass rock stars at the first Connected Peer Dubai conference in October, which was really great to have your involvement. And over the years, I've sort of followed the things that you've been doing. And, you know, I know that you've been around the world a lot in terms of your teaching practice and the international school scene. So where are you based at the moment?
Okay. So at the moment, I am currently living in Beijing in China. We moved here in August, and I'm currently working at the International School of Beijing, which is a pre-K through 12 school. We do standards-based grading and learning from, I guess, kindergarten through grade 10, and then the kids have an option to do the diploma program from the IB in grade 11 and 12. I'm teaching middle school PE at the moment. There are five of us in this department. Mm-hmm. And there are, I think currently we have 23 different classes in middle school, which is grades 6, 7, and 8.
Amazing. And prior to this, I mean, you've been in some other destinations. Like I know that you were in Japan before this school and prior to that, another Asian school?
Yep. So I was at Yokohama International School for 3 years. And then prior to that, we were at the United Nations International School in Hanoi in Vietnam for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And then before that, if you want to get even later or earlier into it, we were in the International School of Tanganyika, which is on the east coast of Tanzania.
Amazing. So, I mean, I work with a lot of people in different schools all around the world. I've just finished our Australian workshop tour, and a number of people always ask me the question about international schools, and, you know, they're working in the Australian school system and they're like, how do I get involved? You know, what's it all about? How did you get involved? Like, how did you end up?
What do you normally say when people ask you that question?
Well, I tend to point out people who, like yourself, have come from, you know, Australia and ended up there on a, you know, in working international schools, and how they end up continually going from one to another. And once they get in the system, they sort of find that they just really love it. And so, I mean, how did you get involved?
There's a short and there's a long vision. So if people are interested out there in getting international, the best way to do it would be to look up different job fairs that run. I know there's a job fair that runs out of Melbourne in December, January. They sort of change the dates depending on holidays and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But generally the big fair organisers are the ones to hit up. So what will happen is you'll look at their website. So for example, Search Associates is one of the big ones. You have to pay a little bit of a fee to register with an associate for your region. So if you're in Australia, you'll register with the Australian region people. And then they get you to fill out all this paperwork, which is arduous and long and processed. So don't think you can log on and do it in 10 minutes. It includes references from supervisors and references from parents, which is kind of freaky. And then they say, yes, you're ready, or no, you're not. And they really screen you quite carefully because they really want you to be successful. And if they feel that you're not going to be successful, that's a counseling process and they'll talk you through that. But if they think you will be successful for the schools that they have at their job fair, then they'll invite you to come to the fair. And it is like a massive adrenaline rush. So you spend 2 days meeting with all these different people and interviewing, and then second interviewing or going to information booths from the school. It's all very hair-raising and scary, but also really exciting because you get to meet, instead of going to one school and having a job interview with one person, I think the last time I interviewed at a job fair, I think we interviewed with 7 different schools in one day.
Yep.
And everyone wants different things. So everyone, you know, it might be that this school wants a middle school PE and this person wants a middle school and high school and this one's looking for an aquatics director, and like, it's crazy. But it's really good fun because you get to really see what different schools are looking for. And then you get to sit down and sort of make some decisions, and they might offer you a job or they might not. So you go through a process of looking at what you want to do. But my husband is also a teacher and in the tech community. So we interview as a couple. So that's also interesting because the school's trying to best fit both of you in the same process.
Awesome. But yeah. So, I mean, they always bring in a lot of new experiences for people who, like yourself, have been quite fortunate to travel a lot as part of your work. Is that true?
Yep.
Or there's lots of other hats that sort of end
there's
up
lots of things
head?
That happen. Absolutely. So depending on the school, and now not all international schools are made equally, just like I would say in Australia, not all schools are equal. Some schools I'd say are much better and more effective in terms of professional development or facilities or whatever, opportunities to live in city or country. So you have to make a decision about what's important to you. But for Clint, my husband and I, it's been really important for us to have different things in different parts of our life. So right now we've got 3 children. So it's really important that our kids have great opportunities to do all the cool things that they like to do. Mm-hmm. So we've arrived at this school, and this school has awesome professional development backup. So I was very fortunate to have leave to come to the Connected PE, and then I was able to take some of my professional development money and go to APAC in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And then I was also given some money to go and present at the Shape America in Boston just last month. So there's been a lot going on. Not all schools will give you time and money. They have a lot of in-service training, but generally good schools are really after your growth as a teacher because they want you to be the best you can be so that you're offering the most effective student learning for the population. So they're really, really pushing you to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, is that sort of connected to how you eventually ended up onto the social media community? You know, were you
in
that sort of celebrated that? And at the same time, obviously, I know Clint very extensively is heavily involved in that as well.
Clint's
so
heavily involved.
Is that what sort of led you on the path? Yeah.
Well, Clint met you, I think, and I think I had already sounded out around what you were doing, but I had not met you. So he met you at the Learning Too, right?
Yeah.
Is that where it was?
Yeah, China, yeah. In Shanghai.
He came back and he's like, have you heard of this Jared Robinson dude, PE geek? I'm like, I've heard of him. And he's like, well, I've just met him and you need to do this. So I sort of sat down and got onto Twitter. I was having a look at, I think that was in 2009. And the school, I think most schools were a bit scary about social media. They weren't sure, you know, we were doing different social platforms and the school had to write policy around what we could do and what we couldn't do and whether we could have videos of kids and, you know, YouTube things. And so it was a big gray area. So I think those of us who've been on social media for a while, although we've done a lot of learning, I think our schools have had to do a lot of learning with us to write policy around use of social media and video and all those things that we're doing as part of our workplace. And I think Clint and I have been involved in a lot of those conversations and that policy writing. I'm sure you have too in your own way.
Well, I mean, in many ways it's pioneering. So, I mean, you look at just by the fact that many of the people that we spoke with, you know, are there first, you sort of have to pave the road for a lot of the things to happen. And that happened at our school, you know, the same conversations, the same things happening everywhere. And, you know, that's good in many ways, you know, because it's very authentic, you know, you're sort of doing it as it happens and the challenges that brings up are real.
We were sitting in a professional development in Vietnam and they'd brought in this amazing speaker and we were doing I can't remember exactly which program we were using, but we were doing a meet behind the meet, right? So mm-hmm. we were typing what we were saying and there was a little back channel conversation going on and we were doing Twitter. And then our head of school came over and told us off in the break for not, you know, for being distracted and being on email or doing something that wasn't related. And I was like,
Hang on.
What are you talking about? And we showed him what we were doing, and he was totally blown away.
Yeah.
By the fact that there was so much thoughtful conversation going on with questions and comments. And so he became quite, he found it then really hard to know whether people were involved in the back channeling or whether they were doing email or something else. So, but he was very apologetic and came away, I think, with his brain blown a little bit about what it would look like for teachers who are a little bit more nerdy. Mm-hmm. than what was being offered right in front of us. So, yeah,
absolutely. So in and amongst this somewhere, you've managed to find, you know, a bit of an interest for technology and maybe how it made things easier for you or helped you connect with someone else in a different part of the world or how it maybe played a role in your classroom. So do you remember how that interest sort of came about and maybe one of the first things that you ever tried and explored in your teaching practice?
I do. I really do. So after getting on social media and I started blogging, which was a really, if anybody, I know you're a big advocate of blogging, but for those people who are listening, if you don't blog, I really recommend that you do. You don't have to write stories and essays. You just need to write a little bit at a time that you can see your growth as a teacher. And if you are looking for jobs internationally, that is a great way to advocate for yourself. Just a bit of a plug there. So I was blogging and I decided that one of the things that was really in front of me when I was teaching my gymnastics class was that I was videoing the kids and they were getting a chance to watch their routines and I was sitting with them and offering them some feedback. But some of my learning support and English as a second learner kids, they needed a lot more scaffolding and conversation than I had really had time for with lots of kids in the class.
Sure.
So I went and talked to some other people about this at my school and no one was really had a solution for me. So I did a little bit more investigation and discovered screencasting.
Yeah.
And so then I went back with some questions for our tech people about what screencasting was and which programs our school would allow us to use with the different channels and feeds and blockages. And so I tried, I think it was Screencastly was the one that was the easiest to use those days. Was that the one? Or the Screener. I think Screener was the one I started with, but they don't work anymore. And so I screencasted each of my kids' videos. I just went and took 10 minutes to watch the video and quickly give them feedback using the rubric and the specific gymnastics language that we'd been practicing. And that was a breakthrough for that class.
Yeah.
Those girls that were really struggling with language, that video got watched 52 times. Now, I don't know whether they were watching it because they were just watching themselves and they wanted to see what they were
powerful
doing.
Powerful at the same time, even that in itself.
They were doing, but the fact that they had an opportunity to listen and watch and correlate that together without me having to sit with them was the biggest moment for me in for that type of unit. It was just a doorway.
It's really leverage teaching and leverage feedback in many ways. And I mean, you're sitting there and you're wondering what screencasting is. Essentially, it's you talking and having your screen be recorded. So if you can think of, you know, in this case, it was videos that were being played and the recording over the top. That's a screencast and they can be as simple or as complex as you like. And there's so many tools that you can use. I mean, I know that you, at one stage we're using QuickCast, which was 3 minutes. And I still use this extensively with just me sharing stuff to other people. But that 3 minute timeline is sort of really quite powerful because you've got to record it.
Well, you have to get what you want to say in 3 minutes and you don't waffle along. I found kids didn't watch more than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Even a minute and a half is about the amount that they will watch.
Yeah.
Listen to. So you really have to be systematically getting your message down there. So for me, I then sent those videos through Twitter and I found a gymnastics expert in our midst. And she came on to Screener and she also made comments to the kids, which kind of was awesome to validate the thinking and to have an expert. And the kids were blown away that there was an expert, I think she's in the US now, who was able to come out and offer them all this advice. They were just, and it really inspired them because they were like, you mean other people are watching this besides us? I was like, oh yeah. And they're like, oh, well, we have to do better. We have to do better than this. And so that was really inspiring too.
Yeah. Opened it up and made it real.
Absolutely.
You know, not just here it is in the classroom scenario. The tech made it authentic because it connected it to other people. And then the tools, like just a simple tool like screencasting enabled feedback to be captured. So, I mean, I think that's a tremendous example of the power of this when it's used and harnessed well. I see so many times where tech can, you know, be that shiny object syndrome where, you know, because it's new, because it's there, sometimes it gets abused and sometimes it takes away from the activity. I mean, have you ever had moments where you've tried something and, you know, you've realized that, hang on, this probably wasn't as effective as I might have thought? Because I know I have. I think it's part of the journey though, but, you know, has anything come to mind where you thought, hang on, that didn't work so well?
I think when I had my school purchase iPods to do a trial, we didn't have the money to buy a class set, so I took a grant out from our tech office and bought 6 iPods. Mm-hmm. But it just became this process of they'd run out of memory, they'd run out of battery, like with so much work behind the scenes to keep them going. I had to really come up with a system that worked well for me. Mm-hmm. But I was finding that what I wanted to do in one of my badminton units is I wanted the kids to video what they were doing and then leave a voice reflection and then download that onto their computer so that I could see it. But it just became the game of now it's my turn, now it's your turn, now it won't download, now it won't upload, now I can't share it. Mm-hmm. And it took away from them playing and it took away from them observing their playing and actually becoming stronger players for the observations of others and peer coaching, because it became all about the iPods.
Yeah.
And so I had to take that away and start a different approach, which involved no iPods. Mm-hmm. Just to get them back into playing, because they were so concerned about the tech part and, you know, I've only got one lesson to get this done and there are 6 of us that need to record and how are we going to, and it just became too hard to manage.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes people seem to suffer from shiny object syndrome and place the technology before they've even really given any thought into the reasoning behind why they do it. And they may have the best intentions at all. You know, I've done this many times, but sometimes the best things are the things where they are tech free. Agree?
I agree. Yes, totally.
Yeah.
I think also before, I see a lot of people will be on Twitter and they'll write and they'll say, my school has just agreed to let me have an iPad. What should I do with it? And I think to myself,
it's backwards. I'm
really happy for you, but surely part of the grant for you to have that new shiny tech should have been how you're authentically planning to use it, so that you already had a mission around some learning that you'd chosen as an area for focus.
Completely. That particular email hits my inbox every single week. Someone has been given something, but you know, the secondary question is, you know, how can I now use it, when the best practice always comes from it being flipped in the other direction, where the reason why is first, and then the tech becomes invisible then, because it's it's actually about whatever it was that you were trying to do with it, and the tech's there just to simply make that happen, make you more effective, you know, bring about something that you couldn't do before. It's not the other way around, where it usually leads to disaster.
No, it's really interesting, because I've now worked at 3 schools that have are really focused on technology as integration with student learning in all areas. And a lot of my units, or the way that I've built my units, are around that seamless use of technology. And I'm finding now that I've just recently changed schools and I'm in China, where Google is not a given, which, you know, you might raise your eyebrows at me, Jared, because you know that I'm a Google fiend. But we can't rely on YouTube and Google, which has really, really challenged me.
Yeah.
And also, I'm working in a variety of different places, and sometimes the places that I am in don't have Wi-Fi. So if we go outside on the field, you know, at one point my invasion games units relied on kids looking at Google slides to identify problems in gameplay, or challenges is a better word, in their gameplay. Mm-hmm. And I had kids who were subbing off were going through these Google slides and looking and seeing whether they could identify challenges in play. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that anymore. So it's I feel in some ways I've had to really revert. I'm still doing the same thing, but I'm not able to do it as seamlessly with the tech as I have been relied on in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, tech is a tool. So it's, you know, and as teachers, we have to adapt to the different settings that we have. You know, the whole idea of, you know, you having Wi-Fi and sometimes not having Wi-Fi is very universal. You know, I work with a lot of schools, and some schools would just, you know, it's just not going to happen for them at all. No matter how hard they lobby, they just can't get it. And, you know, that's fine. It's just, I don't see this as a, you have to do all these things to have any success. No. It's like this continuum, and, you know, you can do a little bit here and a little bit there. And as long as it's helping you and useful to the student population, I think it's worthwhile pursuing.
Yes, I agree. I think I always am surprised when I discover that people are teaching without a whiteboard.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I agree.
Is my first piece of tech is I need a whiteboard and at least two different colored markers.
Yeah. 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 And the reason I say this is because ultimately the PE classroom is a classroom.
Yes.
And it's a very big indicator of how that class and that, you know, that school perceives phys ed when you walk into a place and there is none of that. It sort of almost immediately indicates to me that all they're really doing is, you know, sort of rolling the balls out. There's no teaching happening.
I agree.
It's a big indicator. I mean, I was in a school recently just the other day, and it became very apparent. You know, they have all the money in the world when it comes to resources and equipment, and but there was just no teaching at all seemingly happening from that observation. And it sort of indicates that maybe, you know, maybe they've got a bit of a way to go in terms of the contemporary view of phys ed.
Yes. And I think if you're using a whiteboard, or you're using paper, or you're using a blackboard, or you're using a screen with your computer as a whiteboard, whatever those things are, you're still teaching kids about the fundamentals of, hopefully, of movement. And tactics and strategy, and you're teaching them to be better people by being able to communicate effectively with each other. So there's so many things.
Yeah.
Tech adds another option for those of us who find that to be useful, or who are integrating that straight in. It's just as you said, it's another tool.
It's a tool. Yeah. I mean, it's just like group work. You have moments where group work is appropriate, and you have moments where it's not. And same with tech. That's how I view it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I find now there are some units that I use tech a lot. I lean very heavily on it. And then there are some units I don't use it at all, because it's not adding to what we're doing.
Sure. Absolutely agree. And I think the biggest mistake is that, you know, people think that it has to be all in, and really there's no strategy that you use in a classroom which is all in.
Right.
Something that you do every single time you teach, and every single minute of every single time that you teach, it's really not appropriate for any strategy. Maybe just enthusiasm. I think you need to be all in there at all the time, but it is a tool. I view it as a tool, and I know that we both agree that, and that's where the best stuff comes from. So I know you mentioned blogging throughout this particular episode, and I know that you've been heavily blogging some of your recent practice over at your site. Where do people go to read about more of the things that you're doing?
My blog is called melhamada.com. Mm-hmm. And if you log on there, it's just a WordPress blog.
Yeah.
And it's not very pretty looking at the moment. I can't find the right theme. I'm always having a fiddle around with it. But recently,
You're a learner. That's why.
I'm always fiddling with it. The last couple of episodes that I've been, and what I'm blogging about currently, is professional development, and looking at, I had someone come in with a GoPro, and here's another piece of learning. Okay. So I had a colleague come in and GoPro my lesson, following me. So he came in and videoed me, and I'm putting up a series where I am talking about what I have noticed and what I'm wondering about with my practice based on the videos of me teaching, watching myself teaching, which is very humbling, I have to say.
It would be.
And if you haven't done it, I highly, highly recommend it to you. And I think it would be awesome to get into the practice of videoing yourself. If you teach multiple grade levels, pick one grade level for the first 6 months or year, and then focus on the next one, so you can see if you need to make any adjustments to your teaching based on what you see happening. with your students in your lesson. So I'm currently blogging about that, and I'm finding it to be very, very eye-opening.
Yeah, it would be for sure. I know Ben Landers in one of our previous episodes spoke about how he was doing the same thing. And again, realizing stuff that he had no idea was happening in his classroom practice, and then using that to improve it. I would imagine, very humbling. Maybe some people might find that intimidating, but at the end of the day, it could be just you that views it. If you wanted to give that to others to critique, that would be the next step. And again, would be really quite powerful to see what you're doing. I know I've seen my videos of workshop sessions that I've ran and been able to identify stuff that needs to be eliminated and things that I could improve and ramp up. So I think we assume things sometimes, and when we see them, it can change the game for us if we get that feedback.
I definitely have made a lot of assumptions around what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I've been very cognizant of just simple things like body language, like trying not to put my hands in my pockets, trying not to cross my arms across my chest, and trying to be more available to the kids, because I think some body language inhibits your availability to students. Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed was I don't do that anymore. So that I was just like so pleased to see that. But then there are other things I'm now doing and I was like, oh, stop doing this, and now I'm doing this instead. So I need to get on with that. But I found the most powerful way to have a look at what you're doing is to have someone come in or set up a video so you can really see yourself. And then consider what you notice and what you're wondering about, and phrase those as questions, so that you're not framing it in a negative viewpoint or you're not biasing yourself. You're just being very open-minded to what you notice, mm-hmm. and then what questions come to mind, so that you can really have a much bigger picture of what's happening rather than focus narrowly on maybe one set of things.
Yeah. Amazing advice. We've covered a whole host of things in this episode, you know, right from international school job seeking. Now I've got a particular thing I can point people to when they ask, right through to, you know, tech and some of the mistakes we've made. And then we've wrapped up with some teacher feedback. So I really appreciate you stopping by. For those of you listening, mid interview, my puppy chewed the modem and I lost the internet connection. So what you're listening to is a recording that took place over two distinct periods. So I really appreciate your time on this episode, Mel.
No problems. Jared, I just want to finish by saying a big thank you to you and to our social media crew who continue to inspire me and I think hold me to a higher standard. And I really appreciate your ability to give such personal interactions to people when I know that you have a lot going on and that you have a lot of people that you're working with all the time. And I've really appreciated working with you for quite a long time now. So thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for stopping by on the podcast. There'll be all the links to the things that Mel has mentioned, including her website and a full word-for-word transcript over at thepgeek.com/85. And I look forward to seeing you in whatever country or continent we meet each other next.
I look forward to it as well. Have a great day, mate. Look after that lovely dog of yours too.
Oh, well, I will. See ya.
See you, mate.